Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis. I'm Marzieh Hashemi. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, more deaths, more silence, more questions asking why. Why has much of the world turned a blind eye to the killing of Muslims in Myanmar? Is this Bosnia revisited, where the international community ignored the genocide against the Bosnian Muslims in the 1990s, right in the middle of Europe? Why are we witnessing the silence from political circles, media entities, and even Nobel Peace laureates? And what took the United Nations so long to call for a probe into the killing of Muslims in this country? Stay with us as we take a look at these angles of the situation in Myanmar on this News Analysis.
The Office of the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, UNHCR, says there are ongoing human rights violations in Myanmar's Rakhine State. The commissioner says many of the displaced are too scared to return to their homes, even though they are running out of food in refugee camps.
Movements are restricted in Sitwe, preventing IDPs and host families from earning a living as laborers, tree shoe drivers, and market sellers. Fishermen cannot reach the lagoon, and the nearby waters are too rough for fishing. Some say they're running out of money and food.
The United Nations says there are about 800,000 Rohingyas in Myanmar. It considers them to be among the most persecuted people in the world. They are denied their basic rights, including education, employment, and even freedom of movement. They're also subjected to forced labor, extortion, and other coercive measures. Even the country's so-called democracy icon and the West's most favorite Southeast Asian figure, Aung San Suu Kyi, has turned a blind eye to these atrocities. UN's human rights chief, Nevi Pillay, has called for an independent investigation into abuses by security forces against Rohingya Muslims.
We have been receiving a stream of reports from independent sources alleging discriminatory and arbitrary responses by security forces and even their instigation of and involvement in clashes. Reports indicate that the initial swift response of the authorities to the communal violence may have turned into a crackdown targeting Muslims, in particular members of the Rohingya community.
Iran has also repeatedly condemned the deadly violence against Rohingya Muslims. Tehran has called on the international community to take immediate action to stop the atrocities. Many Rohingyas have been killed in recent months, among them women and children. Amnesty International says Myanmar's security forces and Buddhist extremists are behind the deadly violence. The government-backed Buddhists have even closed down Muslims' mosques and enforced indefinite curfews in Muslim areas, putting further pressure on a long-oppressed community that's been struggling to survive in the absence of world media attention.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guest to the program from London, the head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Mr. Masood Shajadeh. From Washington, Imam of Masjid al-Islam in Washington, D.C., Imam Abdul Alim Musa. Welcome both of you to the program. Well, I'd like to start off in London with Masood Shajadeh. Why are we seeing all of a sudden, it seems to be a lot of interest in this situation, but this has been going on for a while. Why, in general, has the international community basically been silent?
Well, unfortunately, there has been a silence going many, many years, you know, decades. Rohingya Muslims have been suffering systematically, they've been facing discrimination of all sorts. They've been ethnically cleansed from their own land. They've been raped. They are denied basic education, health, housing, every aspect of one's life. And unfortunately, even when they go as a refugees to neighboring countries in Bangladesh and India and Malaysia and Indonesia, also they haven't been treated well at all. And we see the discrimination continues beyond that. We, you know, been concerned on the issue of Rohingyas for many years. We have written reports on it. We have highlighted. We have rang the alarm bells at the UN. But now it seems that, you know, even after the end of dictatorship, of military dictatorship, leadership, the Rohingya Muslims are still being targeted even more vigorously by pro-democracy and Buddhist monks. Buddhist monks now are circling around the villages of Muslims, making sure no aid goes in.
Well, and let me just jump in right here, Mr. Shajira, because I guess a lot of people seem to be confused about this because of the image that usually Buddhists and especially Buddhist monks usually projecting an image of wanting peace. So it seems that a lot of people are surprised. Tell us, what is behind, you think, this reaction by the Buddhist monks in this situation?
Well, really, we are very concerned ourselves, because the reality is that in past the monks being part of the movement to bring democracy and end of dictatorship and the military junta in the region, and unfortunately now they become partners with the military in implementing this. There are two reasons that Rohingyas are being discriminated in this way. One is the fact that they are seen as not part of the same ethnic group as the rest, and indeed there is a level of nationalism or supranationalism at play here. And the other side is actually the fact that they are Muslim, and they're being discriminated in two levels. And I think we need to sort of, if we really dig deep, we really realize that what is happening in the region is the same thing that is happening elsewhere: rise of extreme nationalism.
Okay.
Extreme nationalism, which is leading to sort of ethnic cleansing. We are seeing the same sort of extreme nationalism now in Europe. It's showing its ugly head and it's been targeting Islam and Muslims.
All right, let me get to
really, this is very dangerous.
Let me get Imam Musa in on this discussion, turning to Washington. Now, the United Nations has just called for a probe into the situation taking place in Myanmar. Imam Musa, why do you think it took so long for the UN to even make a statement or to get involved? And right now, it's asking for a probe that we don't really know how long it would take from the probe to actually set up safe havens. Why do you think it's taken so long?
Well, a probe or a study, they do it on us in America all the time. African Americans or Latinos, they say, we'll have a commission to study oppression of people of color. This is the same way the UN is treating the people in Myanmar. But what makes it so simple for the world, it seems as though this Islamophobia, although the oppression of the people of Burma or Myanmar, the Muslims, have been going on now for decades. In fact, Kahan was writing articles back in the 80s on their condition. But what makes it okay for everybody anywhere in the world to attack Muslims? This Islamophobia. And if we wonder why would peaceful Buddhists get involved, we believe there's some extra national encouragement or an enticement.
What do you mean by that, Imam Musa?
To commit these atrocities. Well, it's not proven, but we feel if all over the world there's attacks on Muslims, right? Let's say if Saudi Arabia are Muslims and they're worried about the people of Syria so much, while they're not worried about the people of Bahrain, right? Then why would the same peoples be worried about what's going on in Libya last year and not care anything about the people in Myanmar? It seems like there's a heightened focus on destroying Muslims. Let's give an example. In Bosnia, this was a first Muslim state being born in Europe. So the U.S. and other countries put a blockade on arms to that area. Why? Because the Muslims didn't have any weapons. Everybody else in what was Yugoslavia did. Now, if you look at the Muslims now, When the Muslims call the government to help, right, the government gets involved and killing them. In fact, it was one report that three boats was sank that were full of refugees trying to escape. Well, why would people be slaughtered trying to escape? It seems like that there's a nudging by the international agencies, and I mean European and even Asian. There's one point we should never forget. Myanmar has been isolated for quite some time. Now, with its natural resources being up for grabs, India has just signed some contracts for oil. You have China on the other side. So everybody feels like we'll just be quiet and extract the natural resources. You see?
All right, well, let me turn back to Mr. Shahjadeh in London. Now, Imam Musa just brought up a point about natural resources. I want to look at that because earlier this month, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton had actually thanked the president of Myanmar for, quote, moving his country such a long distance in such a short period of time. And when this was happening, do you think that she was either ignorant of what was happening to the Muslims in that country, or was it that natural resources takes a more important role than perhaps people?
Unfortunately, the international and Western sort of nations always been more concerned with the finances and the resources. And we saw that, what happened in Kuwait and what happened in Middle East and what happens elsewhere. And there really is all to do with getting your hands on the resources and making sure that your opponent here, China and others, are not going to be able to get their hands on the resources. That is one aspect. There is another aspect that, you know, Myanmar has gone through this so-called very peaceful revolution. And it seems that the Muslims are the victims of the bonding sort of process between the military and the so-called pro-democracy on a basis of nationalism, supernationalism. So supernationalism, which results in massacre, ethnic cleansing the Muslims, is the bonding elements. And the international community knows this and wants to keep quiet about it, because at the end of the day, they really don't care if a group of people are become victim of these sort of atrocities. We saw that in Bosnia, we are seeing it in Palestine, we are seeing it in Kashmir, and really here is no different. And you know what the West usually concerns or shows this concern with the human right, in reality, when it comes to the real term, they are not willing to lift a finger, because politically there is no will to actually protect innocent lives when there is no financial award at the end of it.
Well, now, Imam Musa, let's look at what Mr. Shahjadeh talked about. He talked about the pro-democracy movement. And I want to look at that because we know there's a Nobel Peace Laureate there, Aung San Suu Kyi, who has been lauded by the West and much of the international community, and yet either has remained silent or, as a matter of fact, has encouraged what is going on by basically saying that these people need to go back to their own country. How do you put these two together? On the one hand, we have someone who's praised all the time and wanting peace and democracy, but on the other hand, either keeping silent or even encouraging this type of oppression.
Well, we all cheered her along for her decades of struggle, and we actually pulled for the whole country to come out from under this dictatorship, although in 1982 they had declared the Muslim people as non-citizens. But why would she? I think Brother Massoud hit the nail on the head when he talked about the ultra nationalism and the bonding that's going on between those peoples. Why wouldn't she take the side of justice, which she has been crying for decades? Is because she is a part of that bonding process. And neither has she spoken out, nor has her coalition spoken out. They've won several new seats in the parliament there, but neither her nor her coalition has spoken out about it. And I think it's because that they, as Brother Masood said, they want to look forward to a new Burma, a Myanmar, without the Muslims as part of the landscape.
Okay. Well, turning to Atlanta, I'd like to introduce our next guest, the president of Conscious International, Mr. James Jennings. Thank you so much for being with us. How do you see all of this, the situation in Myanmar? Is it basically that the silence had been because of interest in the resources on the ground there? Or is it something else? As our guest in London said, he said that this is the sign of the ultra-nationalism rise to everything. How do you see it? And welcome to the program.
Thank you. I agree that in every one of these situations, there are political and economic and historic reasons. But the key thing right now seems to be the division between the people in Rakhine province and the Rohingya people who are Muslim. And I agree that it's absolutely outrageous that Islamophobia has grown in the world and that there has been a neglect by the international community of these kinds of problems and issues. But the one that is most prominent right now is this situation in Myanmar of the Rohingya people, who are about a million or a little less in that province. And so many have been killed and displaced in the recent violence. But so, I should point out that every nation in the world has actually signed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which prohibits religious persecution. And as a Christian, I have to say that Christians, if you read the newspaper, are persecuted in various places. But certainly Muslims are as well. And even in the United States, where the Quran has been burned, and in Afghanistan, where U.S. soldiers have desecrated the Quran. So what is needed is specific application of peacemaking to the situation in Myanmar, but also an effort to combat, by religious leaders on all sides, combat the intolerance and growing hatred and Islamophobia in this case.
Well, Mr. Jennings, now you talked about Islamophobia. I want to look at it because after 9/11, 2001, we have seen systematic attacks in the mainstream media or corporate media on Islam, on Muslims. How much do you think that that plays a part in all of this, that we're seeing these growing ultra-nationalist waves? And also, at the same time, interestingly enough, a lot of it has become very anti-Muslim. You said that there, of course, there's oppression against all types of groups. But you have to admit, in the last decade, that there has been, it seems, extra or added concentration when dealing with the Muslims.
Well, I agree with that, and unfortunately, it has been turned by political leaders, and especially in the United States and the UK, into a campaign against Muslims in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. And so that has fueled a tension on both sides. And as one of those who has spoken out early against the Iraq war and traveled to Iran and Syria and Sudan and dealt with the leadership in those countries, I think that the United States' attitude has been wrong from the beginning. But of course, it's cloaked in diplomatic language and military goals and all of that. But the people in the United States have learned a sort of knee-jerk reaction against Islam. And I think that is the broader problem. And when you go to Myanmar, you look at the specific problem in Rakhine province, and I think it needs several things. One is the government of Myanmar needs to recognize these people as citizens who have been there for decades. And the other thing is they need help maybe from the international community, organizations such as Mind Conscience International and others, to help the refugees who are in about 30 camps now in that province.
Well, Mr. Shajari, how likely is that to happen, what Mr. Jennings has suggested, that they need to become citizens of that country, that they have been in hundreds and hundreds of years? What will it take to actually get that to happen?
Well, the international community needs to sort of put sanctions against the Myanmar government for not allowing or ignoring the reality that since 7th century these people have been part and parcel of those citizens of that area. And indeed, we need to sort of make sure that the international community articulates that and sanctions anyone who opposes that reality and that truth. But I go beyond that. I will say that, if the Rohingyas weren't Muslim, and indeed if they were from the Jewish background or other religious group, there would have been a huge outcry, much greater outcry over the international community. The reason that is not happening is we are seeing a rise of hatred against Muslim, and indeed a fascism and racism which is legitimized. The only form of legitimized racism and fascism right now is anti-Muslim hatred. And we are seeing that in the streets of Europe. We've seen it among the politicians in Europe, in Holland, in Germany, in Britain, in United States and elsewhere. And this level of demonization, it always in past has led to either genocide, Holocaust or ethnic cleansing, be it in Nazi Germany or in Bosnia, or right now in Myanmar. I think what we need to do is immediately put pressure on international community to give the recognition and support that Rohingyas need. But also long term, we need to fight the rise of this fascism, which is being legitimized through Islamophobia. And we need to actually turn the corner. Otherwise, the whole of the world community is going to face the consequences of this sort of atrocities will becoming a norm elsewhere.
Well, Imam Musa, we only have about a minute left, but how likely is the international community to do this when many would say this is the same international community that has encouraged these negative images to be propagated about Muslims in general? Can people rely on that same international community now to put the pressure that is needed to stop the killing in Myanmar?
No, I think we should focus. We are Muslims. We are over a billion strong. We should concentrate on unity and cooperation between each other first, not to exclude anyone else. But we should concentrate on the Muslims in Myanmar. We should focus on justice for people in Bahrain, the Hazaras that are being killed in Pakistan. The fitna that goes on in Syria and the people of Palestine, we Muslims should focus on justice for all, including all the other issues of people around the world, whether it's Tibet or what have you, but also Kashmir. We should focus, we should be running the humanitarian race altogether toward justice.
All right. And on that note, I'd like to thank
We don't our... believe the UN is going to do anything.
Okay. I'd like to thank our guests for this program, and especially those who are fasting, as I know, during this. We appreciate you joining us. And Mr. Masood Chandra, head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Imam Abdul Ali Musa, the Imam of Masjid al-Islam in Washington, D.C., and in Atlanta, President of Conscious International, Mr. James Jennings. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us. Join us right here, same time, same place, for another look at one of tomorrow's top headline stories. Well, I'm Marzieh Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thank you so much for joining us, and goodbye.